Every time the parable of the prodigal son comes up, it comes up every year, I think to myself, how am I going to say something new about it? And I can get myself worked up, and then I start reading it, and then I realize, why am I so worried? This is such a rich text. This is one of the great parables in the Bible. There's so much in there. And there's always something new to get me excited in there. And so today I want to ask you, why does the younger brother, this younger son rather, why does he ultimately decide to go home? Why does the prodigal son, who's renounced his family and scorned his father, why does he finally make the decision to go back home? It's because he's hungry. And he's alone. That's why. He actually says, here I am dying of hunger. And he says, and later on he said, or just before that he says, he would gladly have filled himself with the pods that the pigs were eating. And no one gave him anything. It's hunger and loneliness that drive him back to the father. He's not having some epiphany about all this dissolute living, as the text says. He doesn't think there's things that need to be atoned for. This isn't some spiritual awakening, and it's not his conscience even weighing on him. It's his physical hunger and his psychological loneliness that prompts his decision to go back to his father. When he realizes that his physical and psychological needs will be met at his father's house, that's when he makes the decision to go back and to say, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me like one of your hired hands. You know, it may not have been the most sincere of apologies. He may be trying to get something out of this. This last week, I came back from a mission trip to the Dominican Republic with 60 students from Loyola High School. And there we lived with families, with working class families, who by our standards were very poor. But while we were there, we visited with migrant workers from Haiti who come to work in the sugarcane plantations. We worked alongside them, and we saw how they lived. How they live in families of, you know, six, seven people in what I can best describe as a shanty town of corrugated tin shacks. That's basically their living conditions. And then we visited the capital of Santo Domingo. We saw some of the tourist sites for sure, but we also saw places that no tourist would ever consider going. The slums of Barrio Simón Bolívar. When we were there, we helped build a house, and we saw a farm that produces a cacao plant that produces cocoa. And every day we would have mass there, and we made sure that we had time for reflections with the boys in small groups. And in my group, the thing that came up again and again was the strong sense of community that we saw among the Dominicans. Regardless of how much poverty we saw, we also got the impression that there was also a sense of care and concern for one another. My host mother, for instance, she's the woman in the middle of this picture, she has three grown kids of her own. Now, I'm not sure about her husband and my broken Spanish and her trying to communicate with her was at times I wasn't fully getting everything she was saying. And I got the impression that her husband had passed away, but I wasn't sure. But she had three grown children, and she had adopted nine other children. Now, not to get too nitpicky, but she didn't go through any formal adoption process, I don't think. She just took in kids from the street. She took in the nine kids who were basically alone or living on the street. And they too, most of them, they're all grown up at this point. Many of them have their own families and have moved out. Two of them, the two young people with them there, there's Vladi and Julissa, along with Adela, who's in the middle there. Vladdy doesn't look too happy because I think Steve, the guy with his arm around her, I don't think he'd showered in a while. So Vladdy doesn't look too happy in that picture. But normally he was a happy guy. These two people are in their early 20s. And Adela, that's her house right behind her with the gate. And beside that is a little convenience store that she operates. And Vladdy and Julissa seem to, you know, they take care of the store for Adela there. And there was one day where I had to stay home because I was sick. And one of the things I noticed was just how many people stopped by to chat. Neighbors walking by, relatives, the neighborhood kids, they all stop in to catch up with Adela, with Vladdy, with Julissa. They sort of stop in for a few moments in the course of their day just to catch up. There is this strong sense of community and connectedness. You know, in developing parts of the world, locals may feel that the government oppresses them, that the rich exploit them, that the West has forgotten them. They may feel a lot of things that some Americano, as we were called, that we have no idea about. But I do not think that they feel lonely. Based on what I inferred from our group reflection with those boys, that's not the case in our society. You know, from what I can see, it's sort of like, I think, you know, half the people have a better relationship with Siri or Alexa than they do with their actual neighbors. Isolation, loneliness, that is the biggest poverty that we face here in our society. In a study last year, nearly half of Americans report feeling lonely. And the thing is that younger generations, you know, whether Gen X, my generation, when it's millennials, Generation Z, all these names for all these younger people, but younger people actually feel lonelier than older people. Then we think of, you know, the elderly being isolated, but actually younger people report feeling lonely more so than do, you know, the baby boomers or the older people. It's younger people who feel lonely. In fact, almost 60% of people in this study reported saying that they do not have someone with whom they can have a meaningful conversation. They do not have someone in their life with whom they can have a meaningful conversation. The prodigal son returns because he's hungry and he's lonely. In our parish, you know, every week we'll get a few people who come to see us looking for some food or for some money. And Anna, our secretary, is absolutely wonderful with them. But I think she'll tell you that most of those people, they want to be listened to for a few minutes. They want to be taken seriously and have a conversation as much as they want their material needs met. In our society, where there is a social safety net, as flawed as it may be, I think it's loneliness that is our great poverty. It's having a friend with whom you can have a meaningful conversation. It's feeling like you belong and are accepted for who you are. That's what people truly long for. And that, I believe, is what drives people to give church a try, or another try after who knows how long. And it's feeling judged, feeling rejected, that is the biggest knock people have against Christians. And that's why here at St. Ignatius, we try to operate under the paradigm of belong, believe, become. First and foremost, our goal is that anyone who comes here feels welcomed and feels like they can belong here. The hope is that they will come to believe as we believe, and then finally become what we ourselves hope to be, missionary disciples of Jesus. But it's the belonging that comes first. The beliefs, the eventual behavior, that comes down the road. You know, in this parable of the prodigal son, I love the image of the father that's presented. But while he was still far off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion. He ran and put his arms around him and kissed him. The father makes the son feel welcomed and accepted even before he has ever given his half-hearted speech about sinning against you and against heaven. The father makes him part of the family again, even before he's fed him. He makes him feel that he is part of the family, that he's accepted before he meets his material needs. That, I think, is what our society needs. That's what our church should be. Are we that welcoming? Are we really reaching out and talking to someone who may be new here? Are we really asking about them? Are we interested in them? Are we listening to their story? Are we making room for them and giving them the best of what we have, the fatted calf, if you will? Or are we sometimes the older brother, resentful and jealous of the attention being shown to the new member? Adela, my host mother, she took kids in, she gave them a home, she gave them a safe place to grow up, to go to school, a place they were loved and accepted, could find purpose, and down the road find a job, a family of their own. Did her actual daughters and son resent her for it? Did they resent those adopted children? I don't know. I hope not. One thing I did glean from these conversations I had with Adela was how happy she is when on Mother's Day, all of her children, adopted and not, come back to visit her. On Mother's Day, her house is overflowing with children and grandchildren, and it seems that nothing makes her happier than when her house is full. So she welcomes and embraces everyone. As a parish, I want to be Adela. That doesn't happen by simply wishing it into existence, though. Over these last couple of weeks of Lent, I'm going to challenge you to sit somewhere else, to talk to someone you don't know. You know, the past couple of years, if you were here, the past couple of Lents, we would rope off a different section every week of the church. It was sort of like forcing you to actually sit in somewhere different. You know, there'd be somebody new near you almost every week that way. I'm roping things off and forcing you. We decided not to force people to do that this year. But I'm going to ask you to step out of your comfort zones anyway. Next week, sit next to someone new. Talk to someone new. And instead of making a beeline for the door, say hello to your prayer partner at the end of Mass. Look for the face you haven't seen before and ask what brought them to church today. I know that for many people this is uncomfortable. If you're an introvert, I'm asking you to step way out of your comfort zones. Blame me. That's all you. Blame me when you're talking to someone else. Say something like, you know, I'm sorry to bother you, but Father Mike, he's a real pain and he's making me do this. And I wish I went to St. Monica's this weekend instead of St. Ignatius. But my name is Joan, and this is my usual parish, and I'm new here, or whatever it is, and just reach out and blame me. I'm okay with it. Put it on my shoulders, especially if it helps someone else feel like that they really belong here, that they have a connection with someone new. And who knows, maybe despite the awkwardness, you'll make a friend. Maybe you'll help someone find what they are truly hungering for, a sense of belonging, someone with whom they can have a meaningful conversation. Maybe you can help someone be truly embraced by the Father.